Well, good morning, everybody, and I know in this room full of scientists that you all know about the heart. It's an extraordinary organ. It starts off in the womb before we're born, and it keeps beating until the day we die, with one exception, when you have to give a talk to over 1,000 people. So here I am. Anyway, today is about building high-performance teams, teams that have heart. And how do we do it? If we look at what President Obama said yesterday, he said we live in a very reflective time in history. And what is the essence of the changes we've seen in the last year, the last 5 years? In 2010, the top 10 in the land jobs did not exist in 2004. By 2012, China will be the number one English-speaking country. And in Shakespeare's time, there was less than 100,000 words. Now we have, in the English language, now we have 540,000. So to build a team of the future in these changing times, what do we do? If we always do what we've always done, we'll always get what we've always got. So to do different things, get different results, we must inspire people, we must look to the future and build teams that will have leadership built into them, inspired leaders. So what is an inspired leader? When I'm inspired, when you're inspired, all your thoughts break the bounds. Your mind transcends limitations, and your consciousness expands in every direction. And you find yourself in a new and a great and a wonderful world. Dormant forces, faculties, and talents come alive. And you discover yourself to be a greater person by far than you ever dreamed yourself to be. So it's inspiration we need today, not information. The information on a package of cigarettes says smoking kills. And then it says basically most wild cigarette. But it's inspiration has to touch the heart, the spirit, to transform people. When this great director got his Oscar, he said the role of the director is to create the space where the actor or the actress can become more than they've ever been before, more than they've ever dreamed of being. Our job is to create that space. It's to build a dream. And when we build a dream or a vision, it gives a purpose and meaning. It gives why to people. In the corporate world today, we have a huge amount of bots. But people are hungry for the why behind the what. They want to know the reason, they want to know the purpose, and they have a hunger for meaning. As Dostoevsky said, they can surround a person with bread, but they still want a reason to live. So we have a dream, and it's up in the air, and then we must build the foundations on it. We have to get a strategy and look at what are our key maximum areas of leverage. When we look at those leverage areas, we set 5 major goals, not 25, just 5. So you have a vision, you've got to see it in order to be it. And it's amazing when you look around the world, how many teams just don't have a clear vision. Dr. Mark Lyons gave me an article from the Harvard Business Review on Friday, and a man was saying that in the top 120 teams he looked at, less than 10% of them even knew who was on the team. So you've got to get this vision, and once you have a vision, it transforms the self-image of the team and of the individual. So let's look at self-image. Your self-image and the image of your team, your personal self-image, is the strongest force in the human personality. The strongest force of the human personality is the need that for us to remain consistent with how we define ourselves. So we self-correct up or we self-correct down to that image, to that vision. So the way you set your goals, choose your values, or react to life is never determined by who and what you are, but by who and what you think you are. And what effect does that have on our team? The reality is that if we haven't got a high vision, a new normal, a strong self-image, we will throw away, we will ditch any level of success that doesn't match our self-image. We'll self-correct back down to our comfort zone. I met a golfer in Ireland some time ago and said, he said, that's amazing because I was playing golf last week and I was playing fantastic golf. He said, Tiger Woods wouldn't play better, first 9 holes. But I was playing above myself and I kept saying to the people with me, to my fellow golfers, this is not me. I don't normally play like this. You should have seen me last week. And what do you do in the second 9 holes? Self-correct straight back down to where you belong. So we look at self-image and the vision that people have themselves. At the age of 4, 96% of children have high self-esteem and a positive self-image. At the age of 14, 98% of children have a negative self-image. And why? Because on average, we parents speak to or review our children negatively 90% of the time. And I have 3 children and I'm wondering, is it only as low as 90? So the greatest poison in your family, the greatest poison in your team, is what we call the NBRs. The negative related remarks, that put down. And by the time a child is 12 years old, they've received 100,000 NBRs. So these are the people that we must take into high-performing team members. So we've got to have a vision that will transform our self-image. We've got to see it and we've got to be it. After our vision, we need strong core values. And our core values must be crystal clear. And I've seen core values written up in different companies around the world. You see them in PowerPoints, you see them in up in posters on the wall. But we've got to get the core values out of the poster, out of the plaque, and into the hearts and souls of people. And we do this through stories. Each core value must have a story to illustrate it and help it to engage with people, to make it personally relevant for people. For example, one of Vortex's core values you see in this story from Thailand, where after the tsunami, the Autech people themselves went out and helped build 11 boats, 5 schools, and one store. Fantastic stories there to illustrate a core value. So don't just put your core values up on the wall. Have a story that makes it live. Then we need 5 major goals and a blueprint, a roadmap, or milestones. When you define your goal, get clarity, get focus. In my work with managers across the world, the single biggest problem in goal setting is lack of clarity, lack of focus. And don't worry about the how, because if you have a clear goal, you will create, you will invent the how. Edward Henry did not know how he was going to climb Everest. No one had done it before. He just knew he was going to do it. So when you go from a hoping to a knowing, that's a magical transformation. Yale University, 1952, they asked the students, many of you have written goals and a blueprint for their achievement. 3% had written goals. 20 years later, they studied them, and they found that the 3% were financially worth more than the 97% put together. So, it's important to write your goals, and if you do, they're 10 times more likely to happen than if you don't. Then when you have it, we can procrastinate, but don't worry about getting it right. Get it going, and you'll self-correct up to getting it right. Get it started.
Then, critically important thing in the vision of Team Morale, when you've achieved the major goal, don't just set the next one, celebrate your goals and celebrate your team. Because ultimately, for the energy of the team, it's not about getting a goal, but rather who you become as a person is critical in the goal. Are you a happier, healthier, more creative, more vital, more innovative person? Or are you a tired, cranky, fatigued, black-eyed, burned-out goal achiever? So it's not what you get, it's who you become. Then you have a goal or a well-formed outcome. What's the goal? The goal is to increase our sales by 20% in the next quarter. Very simple. But it's not enough. We must get a well-formed outcome. And the well-formed outcome is to increase our sales by 20% in the next quarter in a way that our customers feel fantastic about us and we feel even better. So a goal must be holistic in that sense. I remember if you get the first 15% right, Dr. Edward Stelling said, the rest will follow effortlessly. So the first 15%, critically important. When you meet your team in the morning, the first 3 minutes will determine the next 5 hours. When you go home to your family in the evening, the first 3 minutes will determine the next 5 hours. In a survey in Ireland, we're asking to get 100 steps to peer improvement in one team. And when I asked, got the feedback, the manager said, but the first thing they said to me was that when you come in the morning, it would be fantastic if we had to talk among each other and guess what kind of a mood you were in. If you were just coming in good humor and get it over with. So again, what are you bringing in with you? The rest follows easily if you get that right. So we'll look again, what do we need for this good team need? We need an inspired leader, an inspired vision that will build the team self-image and then write down our objectives. So how do we make this happen in a very practical way? We get our five major things we've got to do that are in alignment with our goals, and then we put 100% into doing that one most important thing, the ability to prioritize. 104 CEOs were asked, what would you look for in people who want to be senior management? One was an ability to prioritize, and the second was a sense of urgency. And then you catch up the outcome and give 100% to making it happen. Take small steps. If you look at hot water is hot up to 211 degrees. However, it only boils at 1 degree extra at 212 degrees. That 1 degree extra gives us steam. And what does steam do? Steam will take a train across a continent. And what we're looking for in our team is that 1 degree extra of service, that 1 degree extra of good humor, that 1 degree extra of being positive, that 1 degree extra of inspiration. And the great vision by far my collection is that it's not that our goals are too high and we don't achieve them, but it's that they are too low and we achieve them. Then with the team, it's not enough to have goals. We must have very smart goals. Goals that we look at and see where we get our leverage. 20% of our tasks will give us 80% of our results. So are our team, each person on the team, focused on their 20%? So we focus on that 20% and leverage that. In 2007, Gallup did a poll and discovered that in terms of people using their strengths and their gifts in teams, only 17% of people felt their strengths and their gifts were being used. Now, that leaves us 83% untapped potential. And what could we do with that? That 83%. If we could lower the team costs by even doubling that to 34%, or even double it up again to 68%, and finally even go over 100%. And I say to teams, on a scale of 1 to 10, where are you in terms of, we the company using your skills? I had one 500 million project in Ireland and had 25 managers in, and I said, where are you in the scale of using your strengths, using your gifts? The average out of 4 out of 10. And I said, well, you're twice as high as the normal. But can we get the two important questions we asked? What would it take to get you to a 5? And then what did it take to get to a 10? These are the empowering questions. Now, when you have a clear goal and you have a strong self-image, your brain is a filter here. And as I am in this room, there are 8 million pieces of information coming to me now. So what are the important things that go in? This filter will attain things that are connected with your goal and connected with your self-image that will help you achieve that, whether it's a high self-image or a low self-image. And if you look at this back here, you're saying the whole world is against me. Once he says that, that's his goal, that's his vision, that's his self-image. All the good way to him is, you can say that thing. And people are saying, I love you around here, but that will not fit in. We hear people say that there's recession, we have no opportunities in this team. And people back on speak and say that again. But if we go back to that, we see that there are these massive opportunities over here that he doesn't see. Jack Tanfield had about 400 of us in the Mansion House a few months ago in Dublin. And he showed us a video, and there were two basketball teams playing, one in white singlets, one in black singlets. He said, count the number of passes that they did in the white singlets. Some people counted 7, and he said, any more, some people got 8. Then they went to 9, and a few people got 9. And then he said to us, did any of you see the man dressed as a gorilla who walked out through the basketball court, waved at the camera, and came back again? And we didn't, because there was no gorilla. And then he played again, and sure enough, there was the gorilla. So the gorilla is the opportunity, and we have incredible opportunities, but very often we don't see them. But if you have clear goals and a strong self-image, you will see the opportunities. How do I select my team? Jim Collins, in his book, How Companies Go From Good to Great, said, number one, get the right people on the bus, in the right seats on the bus, get the wrong people off the bus, and know where you're going. So how do we get the right people on the bus? Dr. Martin Seligman here from Pennsylvania University said we can recruit people normally, we recruit them with aptitude and ability and in a motivation desirable way. But he said that's not enough. If I'm writing music, composing music, I can have the aptitude or the ability. And I can have the motive, the desire or the will to do it. But if I run into an obstacle, I can throw in the towel. But the third factor is much more important, he says. It's optimism and a sense of persistence. Persistent optimism is what you need in your team. If you come up against an obstacle and you go through it, you test this with an insurance company. And he found that on the optimism scale, the bottom 50%, twice as many death in the first 2 years. But in the top 25%, they sold 50% more than those in the bottom 25%. On the optimism scale. Sir Ernest Shackleton never lost a man in Target, but he said optimism is true moral courage. So recruit based on optimism and persistence. Now to retain the most we recruit them, got them understanding. How do you know the right seat? We have diversity. We need diversity in an orchestra, and we need diversity in the teams. And we need to bring emotional intelligence as a leader to this where we have self-awareness and awareness of others. And it's twice as important as analytical skills the higher you move up in the company. So we have 9 energies in the team, 9 gifts, 9 talents. We have perfectionists who look at standards. We have the helpers about relationships, the achievers about success, the creative artists about doing beautiful slides and everything else. The observers about doing the research, the lawyers get to ask the tough questions. The optimist sees opportunities for growth and business opportunities and development. The leader empowers each person in the team, and the peacemaker gets us to fly information like wild geese, and they're 71% more efficient. So that's what the leader does. So our job is to get the people on your team, tap into their strengths, and get them into high performance. And it's this understanding of the team that's critical, because we can spend a huge amount of our team teaching a hen to swim. And I guarantee you, if you take the hen out of the water and did a duck, The duck is good at swimming in water. Great teams are not focused on producing great products or great services. No, they're focused, if great teams have a focus and an atmosphere where people feel they can grow and they can flourish, they have an opportunity to reach their potential, then great services and great products flow from that. So that space to flourish, and people will not remember what you said. And people will not remember what you did, ever. But people will always remember how you made them feel. That's our history. People who made us feel could achieve anything, or people who made us feel were never up to much. So great teams make people feel important, they make people feel valued, make people feel appreciated, and they make people feel that what they're doing really makes a difference. And our job is to give that to them in every interaction. People want to be part of something larger than themselves, want to be part of something they're proud of, that they sacrifice for, and that they can trust, and that they can build trust. Stars want to be loved. And within that we hit roadblocks. We hit times like a crisis or a recession or whatever it is. And then sometimes our light goes out. But then it is blown into flame by an encounter with another team member. And each of us owes enormous gratitude to those people who have rekindled this inner light, and especially in a time of recession. So leaders need this flame lit. And look at your people, just look around your people. It's not what you look at, but what you see. See what's magnificent and noble and bright and brilliant and wonderful people, and bring it out of them. Then they will bloom. All we have to do is look for the positive things, touch those positive things, and let them bloom, let them flourish in here. Because we need to shine a light on what's right. We've got to continually catch people doing things right. How do we learn to walk? We learn to walk by remembering how we walked, not by remembering how we fell and reminding people of how we fell. A series of 10 things they ask people and teams to look at. They ask the team members, the employees, and they ask the managers. And what the managers thought of these few things here, here's on the scale of 1 to 10. Managers put appreciation number 8, a feeling inner things number 10, an understanding attitude number 9, and good wages number 1. That's what they thought people in the team wanted. When they asked the people themselves, it was a totally different response. Number 1 was appreciation. Number 2, a feeling of being able to things. Number 3, an understanding attitude. And then number 4, or number 5 then, was good wages. So, we simply don't get it often that it's appreciation, because we're all so busy. We don't have time to show that appreciation. But they did a survey of people who left exit interviews. 46% felt unappreciated, 61% felt unimportant, and 88% felt unacknowledged as persons, as people. So praise must be immediate and specific. I don't say, "Oh, the best secretary we ever had." I say, that letter you wrote to that client made a huge difference to me and a huge difference to the company. We catch them in the act of doing things right. So, to get it, in summary then, we need to get a leader who will inspire us, and we've got to be inspired. And the leader today does not create followers, the leader creates other leaders who continue to inspire from inside. We've got to get a vision and set clear goals. We've got to get our core values clear and attach a story to each core value. We've got to write the goal down, we've got to prioritize. We've got to select based on optimism and persistence, and we've got to understand the team, get the right people in the right seats, and stop teaching the hen to swim. Our competitive advantage then is twofold, it's internal and external. Internal is teamwork, external is the customer experience. Dr. Martin Seligman again did a study of 250,000 managers over a 29-year period. And he said those were the worst, he got a tier line, those were successful and those were unsuccessful. Those who were successful were focused on the future, on their goals, how to achieve them, and were positive and optimistic. Those who were unsuccessful were focused on the past, what went wrong, and who to blame, and they were negative and pessimistic. So, that leaves us with your team. It's up to you to be the inspired leader in your team right now. Nelson Mandela, in a speech to Brian Wilson, wrote from one time, he said, our greatest fear is not that we're inadequate. Our greatest fear is that we are powerful beyond measure. He said, who are we? Who are you? He said, not to be brilliant, gorgeous, talented, and fabulous. He said, who are you not to be? Your pain small does not serve the Lord well. And as you let your own light shine, you unconsciously give other people permission to do the same. As you're liberated from your own fear, your presence, just your presence, automatically liberates others. So bring the team your talent. Bring the team your ability. But above all, bring the team the gift of your joy, your good humor. Because there's nothing as awful as cranky talent. So bring your joy. The single most radical revolutionary act you can commit in today's world is to be a joyful person. To give children the idea that some of us adults are actually enjoying ourselves. Give up liking your bad deeds. Dare to be the joyful, magical people you were born to be. And bring that to your team. And your team will be sustainable. Thank you.